You're listening to the Christian Humanist Radio Network, ChristianHumanist.org.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100-year wars. The voices sound sad as they're singing along, another piece of America's lost.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the City of Man podcast. My name is Coyle Neal. I am an associate professor of political science at Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri. And that's probably all of the information I should give because I have no idea when this particular episode will drop. Maybe we will still be on lockdown. Maybe we won't. Who knows? Maybe it'll be 2030 when this drops. Joining me today to talk about some of the obscure corners of country music is Danny Anderson, professor of English at Mount Aloysius College in Crescent, Pennsylvania. Did I get that all right?
Assistant professor.
Assistant professor.
Yes.
All right.
I finally go up for promotion next year, so we'll see.
Hey, there you go. It is a good feeling, let me tell you. No, I'm kidding. It doesn't matter at all. Also joining us, not from Crescent, Pennsylvania, nor from Mount Aloysius College, is Michael Farmer, currently living in Woodstock, Georgia. Is that right?
That's correct. And, you know, I put in my application for tenure and then quit before they had finished looking at it. Although I was told I probably wouldn't have gotten it.
Wouldn't have gotten it.
Apparently, on our application, and I won't say the name of my institution, as has been my my practice since I left it. But on our application, you have to answer a variety of spiritual questions. And having already decided that I wasn't going to stick around, I wrote what I really thought about issues like evolution.
Well, we could talk about the problems of Christian higher ed all day, but it's a small world and nobody cares about it. So let's move into today's topic, which is another small world that nobody cares about. Let's talk about alt country.
What is your nasty attitude toward alternative country, Coyle? These show notes are terribly passive aggressive. You just said nobody cares about it. What is your emotional block?
I was going for aggressive with the show notes. Clearly, I failed here. I think some of it depends on what we mean by alternative country. But let me give the listeners the show notes. So my three propositions, and these might very well be contradictory propositions. And I this is based on both a reading about alternative country and this country music book that I just finished, and then listening to the albums that Danny sent me, and then listening to a couple of other artists that were recommended other places. That's where these come from. First proposition, alternative country is for musicians who couldn't quite cut it in Nashville, Bakersfield, or Austin. Second, alternative country is for people who don't like white rural America. And third, alternative country is for people who have the sensibilities of a mopey teenager. Those are my arguments as to what alt country is, and you guys are free to fight me. That's why I put them there, because you both like alt country. I will say I didn't hate all of the stuff I listened to. Some of it I thought was okay, but some of it I was like, well, I don't even know that this is actually country. I think this is probably something else. And then some of it I thought, this is just terrible. It just depends, and that could mean terrible either in terms of content or terrible in terms of production value.
Can you tell us what you listen to? I know Danny sent you some stuff.
So yeah, of course, we've rescheduled this once or twice now, so it's been a while. I listened to that Uncle Tupelo album you sent me. I think I listened to
Which one
to
did
all,
you send, Danny?
No Depression?
I think I sent No Depression.
Was it
a compilation album? I don't know.
No, it was No Depression. It's probably the one I liked best of them. I listened to everything that you sent me, and now I'm blanking on what it was. So I listened to all of those albums, and I don't have Facebook open in front of me, so I can't check the message. So anyway, those are my claims, and you guys can just spend the rest of the episode telling me how wrong I am, and that's fine. Before we
you're
do
quite
that,
wrong.
That's
I mean,
yeah.
Not,
again.
Not to spoil it, but you're like these are absurd propositions.
Okay.
I just for clarity, I also sent him the old 97s.
Yes.
Who are awesome. And a Whiskey Town album, Strangers All.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to like about that?
There was something else, too. There's a message that Michael wasn't on. You included something.
This is probably about how much my band sucked.
No.
No.
I don't remember that one. That might. Oh, you know what? I started a conversation. It was the same one. I started a conversation, and I thought it was going to both of you, and so I sent the same one to both of you. So it was the first. It was the Uncle Tupelo compilation album.
Uncle Tupelo, Old 97s, and Whiskey Town is a very good place to start.
That may very well be the case. I also listened to on the recommendation of this Country Music USA history. That's the basis for the Ken Burns documentary. I listened to an album by Wheeler Walker Jr., which I do not recommend.
I don't know that.
Yeah, I mean the argument the book made is that he, stylistically and content wise he's good. He's just exceptionally crude, which is true. That he's exceptionally crude. The style and the content I can't recommend. And there were a couple of others I've listened to. So like I said, you guys are spend the rest of the episode telling me that I'm wrong. But first, tell us what alt country is. What is alternative country, and why are we doing a whole episode on it? Either you want to jump into that, or I can share the definition from this book. Either way is fine.
I mean, I think of it as country from a kind of alternative rock perspective. So allmusic.com, I don't know if they still do, but they used to call it alternative country rock, which I think is a much better term for it, because I think it has more to do with Graham Parsons than it does with anything we've been talking about as country music. And I think, Coyle, that might be where your error is, why your three propositions are so absurd, because you're thinking of this as an outgrowth of country music when really it's an outgrowth of rock music. So I think of it as being what happens when a bunch of people who were raised on the Minutemen and the Sex Pistols discover Johnny Cash. And I think you hear that really, really clearly in that first Uncle Tupelo album, which is almost exactly what I just described. Danny, what would you add? Or
yeah,
how would you argue with me?
Well, no, I mostly agree. I don't know that the direction has to be in that direction. I can also see this as music for people like me who grew up listening to their parents' country music and then discovered early on, you know, the Sex Pistols and the Replacements, I think, is another big
influence.
I can hear a lot of the Replacements in Uncle Tupelo and in Whiskey Town, which therefore makes Ryan Adams' career make sense, too. And so I think it can go in both directions. That would be the one thing that I would do differently or add to what you just said. And also, I think that the term doesn't get used much anymore. I think
this has
generally been morphed into something they would just generally call Americana music is the label that they use to sell this kind of stuff now.
Now, Danny, when I make genre tags, and I don't know that I've ever talked about this on this podcast, but I have a very elaborate genre tag system. I use more than one for every song, things like that. I do make a distinction between alternative country and Americana, which is that alternative country is in some way influenced by alternative rock. So somebody like John Prine, who just died the day before we were recording this, he does what I would call Americana music. That would be country music that is too far from the mainstream to be played on country radio, but is still recognizably country. But alternative country is something that owes something to the Minutemen or owes something to Nirvana or whoever, whatever alternative rock group you're thinking of. So I agree that the term alternative country has historically been over-applied, but I still think it's a useful term that describes an actual style of music.
No, I would agree with that, actually. And that distinction is important because you're right. There is a difference between, you know, James McMurtry and I mean, you wouldn't throw Old Crow Medicine Show into the same boat as Whiskey Town, right?
And then the other side of that triangle is country rock, which continues to exist. So somebody, a group like the Jayhawks, especially their first few albums, they're not alternative country. I mean, they hung around in that scene, but there's nothing alternative about the Jayhawks until Sound of Lies, probably. Mm-hmm. They're making country rock. They're making really high quality country rock, and they shared the stage with Uncle Tupelo. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't call that alternative country. Now, Sound of Lies, I think you're getting into they add the more alternative influences, and they add psychedelic rock to what they're doing, and you could make a case for that. But their album that everybody knows is Tomorrow the Green Grass, and I mean that is a straight ahead 1970s country rock record. So why pretend it's alternative country?
which is different still than Southern rock, I would say. I think that's one way that that alternative country as a form of alternative rock music, that's an important distinction, because I don't think it has all that much in common with like Lynyrd Skynyrd, right? I feel like it has much more in common with a different kind of rock band.
Yeah, although you get a band like Drive-By Truckers.
Oh, well,
who really are doing Southern rock and alternative country at the same time. And I'm fine calling a great deal of their music, not all of it, but a great deal of it, alternative country.
I was thinking, but they have an album called Southern Rock Opera, right? And so, yeah, there's a, no, I think that there's, and in fact, I was just thinking about them as I've been taking tons of walks in town, given what's been happening to the world. So I've just been walking around town like a madman, and listening to a lot of alt country. And so I was listening to Drive-By Truckers recently, and it made me think, so Jason Isbell came out of the Drive-By Truckers. He was like a cast member there for a while, before he broke off on his own.
Before he learned to sing.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But when I've seen Jason Isbell several times, and early on especially, there was always this contingent of Drive-By Trucker fans at those shows that were the most obnoxious people. Like I hated bumping into the Drive-By Trucker fans at Jason Isbell shows, because they have something entirely different in mind than what Jason Isbell brings you. And that to me is like a good indicator of the diversity of this subgenre.
Right. And I mean, obviously the fact that I use multiple genre tags for songs suggests that I understand that these things bleed into each other. And so Jason Isbell's album Southeastern, which was his big breakthrough album, there's definitely songs on there that I would call alternative country. What's the Super 8? Is that the song I'm thinking of, Danny?
Somebody's evening didn't go so well. If I ever get back to Bristol, I'm better off sleeping in a county jail. I don't wanna die in a Super 8 motel. Having such a sweet night, audience is just right, drinking like a pirate dude.
About the hotel room,
right.
Drunken, almost dying. Yeah.
That and Flying Over Water and the Stockholm, I think is the name of the song. All of that is really like almost traditional alternative country, if you can use a term like traditional for it. But then there's a lot of stuff on there that is what I would call Americana, stuff that sounds like country music but has a little bit more of an edge to it, and certainly wouldn't get played on country radio, not because it's not good, but because it's not polished enough.
Well, Elephant is also very thematically difficult, right? And
it says the F word in it too.
And that too.
Said, Andy, you're better than your past. Winked at me and drained her glass. Cross-legged on a bar stool like nobody sits anymore. She said, Andy, you're taking me home. But I knew she planned to sleep alone. I'd carry her to bed and sweep up the hair from her floor.
But anyway, this is just to say that the term took off in the 1990s. It got applied to any alternative band or any alternative band with any kind of country edge. It got applied to any country song that had any kind of alternative edge. It got way over applied. But I do think it's a helpful term that means something, and it is a distinct style of music. And probably we're going to end up talking about Americana as much as anything here. But Americana is a much broader genre. And it's a much older genre. So I think in some sense you can call a group like The Band Americana as much as you can call them country rock. Or, for that matter, the Bruce Springsteen album Nebraska, I think, is a prototypical Americana album. But under no circumstances is it an alternative country record.
Do you want to give us a quick definition of Americana, if we're going to spend as much time talking about it?
I think it's something that is recognizably country music that is too unpolished to be played on country radio. I think that would be my definition. But it also brings in stuff like folk and blues. The kind of boundary term for Americana is roots rock, but I think of roots rock as being something heavier than Americana. I don't know. Again, I think about this stuff a lot because I use these genre tags, and that's fun for me. But my wife makes fun of me, so maybe you guys or the people at home are thinking, oh, this person is crazy, and maybe I am, but I do give a lot of thought to where the boundaries of these genres lie.
Yeah, I also think, although Americana is, I will give it a broader definition than that in some ways, because I think you run across some people who they tour with those same acts, right? Someone like St. Paul and the Broken Bones, who I discovered they opened for Jason Isbell at one of those shows at the Georgia Theater in Athens. And that's a straight up soul band, right? Southern, sounds like Wilson Pickett, basically. And I think that also then gets lumped in. So I think there's a way to incorporate jazz and the blues and particularly soul music in this as well. And so I think it, in some cases, it completely leaves country behind. It's unrecognizable as country. But because they can't sell soul music anymore, then Americana is a handy place to find it. There's a really great guy I saw once when I went to see the Marty Stewart show. Pokey Lafarge was his name.
Yeah.
And he did like old timey, like 20s style kind of jazz music. And I don't know how else without the Americana tag, how else you would categorize that, but it no way resembled country music.
Danny, how do you feel about calling Americana roots rock with less rock?
That's interesting. I can see that. Yeah, because that is the one genre that gets kind of underplayed, I think, in a lot of Americana music. I mean, I guess one reason that Jason Isbell, his music isn't rocky in the way that it was with Drive By Truckers, right? And so I think Americana is a better place for him to rest. I mean, he does have some rock numbers, right? But like largely, I think that doesn't work with him anymore. And so, yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, by the time you get to the fourth Uncle Tupelo album, Anodyne, do you know that one, Danny?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Anodyne is hardly an alternative country record, wouldn't you say? I mean, Anodyne is basically a roots rock record with some Americana songs in between.
Yeah. And it goes the other way, too. Wilco, I mean, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot isn't recognizably country at all. It's more like a Beatles album.
The website I use to work out my genre issues is a website called rateyourmusic.com, which I highly recommend. And because you can vote on genres for albums and for individual songs. And I really like it. And of course, you can rate your music as the name suggests. But they drive me nuts about Wilco because they have called every album that Wilco has ever made alternative country. And I don't think they've done country music since 1997 in any meaningful way.
No, I agree. I totally agree. Yeah.
And their first album, AM, I don't think is an alternative country album. I think it's just a straight up 70s country rock album, just like the Jayhawks. So I get frustrated. I think that term gets crazy over applied. I think people use it to mean what Coyle is kind of using it to mean, which is country music for people who don't like white rural America.
Right, which you have not talked me out of that part of it yet, by the way.
That's the least absurd the least absurd proposition you make in that intro, Coyle.
Well, I'll stand by the other two with the understanding that you guys are basically saying, well, this isn't country music.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
Well, yeah, go ahead, Danny.
When you say couldn't quite cut it in Nashville or Austin or Bakersfield, right?
Or Austin. Right. I mean, a lot of them are based in Austin.
Yeah, that's like Austin's like the epicenter for a lot of this stuff, right? And And I think, well, but even when you say couldn't quite cut it, you're suggesting that Florida-Georgia line is more talented than Nico Case, right? You know, and that's just like on its face, hilariously bad, like a bad reading of like talent. So when you say couldn't,
that's a
cut,
dumb opinion. You know, I love you, Coyle, but that's a dumb
opinion. No, that's fine. I don't know that I've ever listened to either of them like knowingly. So
you've definitely listened to Nico Case because she is the theme music for the Christian Humanist Podcast. That is her song. People got a lot of nerve.
I've never listened to Florida Georgia Line. Again, it may have been on the radio, and I didn't know it was Florida Georgia Line. So I have no way to compare the two.
Well, let me make it easy for you, Coyle. Nico Case is about a billion times more talented than Florida Georgia Line,
or almost anybody on mainstream country radio, and for that matter, let's just be honest, right?
Yeah. There are exceptions. I think Casey Musgraves probably has the talent that Nico Case has, but also Casey Musgraves is making wildly left of center country music. I mean, I don't think anybody in their right mind would call her alternative, but I you know, this is why this particular genre category is unhelpful in some ways.
Right. And at the end, I've got a quote that I'll share towards the end that hopefully tries to bring the two of them together a little bit. I put this on social media a month or so back that I think is helpful.
So I would say that the real problem with your statement that these are musicians who couldn't cut it in Nashville or wherever doesn't really work, because most of these people never had any kind of desire to cut it in Nashville. And also that language that describes outlaw country, right? I mean, literally, outlaw country exists because Willie Nelson couldn't cut it in Nashville.
We talked about that, though, in the outlaw, when we talked about outlaw country episode, and about whether or not that was actually true.
Right. But Jeff Tweedy of Uncle Tupelo and Wilco, he never had any desire to cut it in Nashville.
Sure.
What he wanted to be was the Minutemen. They've got a song about it on their second album called D Boone.
This is
And it's just about how all they ever wanted to be was a band driving around in a crappy van playing shows to 15 people. So I think the entire standard of success for this movement called alternative country looks radically different than Keith Urban or Kenny Chesney or whoever you're thinking of as having made it in Nashville.
Right. And obviously, if you're not trying to do that, then you're right. There is a different standard that needs to apply there. So that's fair. And I assume that there are some who did try and didn't make it. I'm not familiar enough with all of the possible alt country people out there to know.
Do any of them come to mind for you, Danny? Most of the ones I'm familiar with, I don't think ever would have tried to make it on country radio.
Lucinda Williams. Yeah, I'm thinking of people who had like, I'm thinking again going back to the last time we talked. Who knows what order these will come out in? We talked about Katie Lang, right? And so people like that who had like early crossover success with country radio, but then realized but were kind of indigestible to country radio. And so, yeah, Lucinda Williams would be another one that would put in that.
I have written down in my notes, and I'd have to go back and look at the specific context of this, but under that I've written down Tim O'Brien and Robbie Foulkes.
Robbie Foulkes is a good example, actually, because he is like a historian of country music in addition to everything else he does, and a session musician on some actual pop country records. So, I mean, maybe he would say he couldn't make it in Nashville. I don't know if that's the way he thinks of himself. I think of him as being very distinctively Chicago.
Well, and maybe what I should have added into the show notes to get slightly less hostility here is couldn't cut it in Nashville or are intentionally and consciously anti-Nashville.
Yeah, I think that's probably a better way to put it.
Yeah, it's a genre that I think I'm speaking broadly here, but I think there's a resentment for what Nashville defines as country music. And I think that there's a way in which the people who are interested in this kind of music have a much more kind of like expansive view of country music and much less interest in commercial success than artistic, I don't want to say rigor, but you know what I'm saying? I think they would rather be seen as artists than performers, I guess.
This is why it's important to remember that Uncle Tupelo's Heroes were the Minutemen of all people, or the Replacements, or these other bands that had a following. I mean, lots of people like the Replacements, but they were never huge bands. You know, the band that got the biggest out of that kind of 80s alternative rock scene was U2, but then also the REM. And REM is interesting because they pull up a lot of these bands. They tour with them. They feature their members on their records. Peter Buck produces records for some of these people. So I that's the place to look for alternative rock in terms of its influence. It's these people who kind of hit the road in their vans and do it themselves.
I think, yeah, when you mentioned REM, it kind of sparked something in me. I feel like rather than saying alternative rock, I think more specifically college radio,
yes,
the format of college radio from the 80s, which REM is what, that's where they emerged from. I think that this form of rock music that finds its way into alt country has its roots in that kind of college radio station.
Remember that Uncle Tupelo puts out their record before Nevermind. And so 90s alternative rock radio, and especially 90s post grunge radio, does not exist when Uncle Tupelo starts. And so if you're thinking of them as the kind of linchpin of this movement predates what you probably think of as alternative rock radio.
Which I think bringing in college and that alternative rock approach brings in that third point or proposition I made, that alt country is for people who have the sensibilities of a mopey teenager. I mean, isn't that by definition who it's targeted at?
Well, I mean, would you say that alternative rock has mopey teenager sensibilities? I don't think so.
I mean, I know little about alternative rock, but that is when I think of the people I know, when I think of my friends who listen to, tell me they listen to alternative rock again. It's not a world I know much about. I would think, yes, those were the mopey teenagers.
I think there's something to that, but I don't know that I don't like the term, I suppose. Yeah, I think they're like.
Oh, sure. Clean that up if you want to. That's fine.
No. People who are like more introspective, I suppose. The same people who would listen to like The Cure or something like that, right? I don't know that. I guess there's like a value judgment with mopey teenager that I don't.
Yeah.
I get. The oh
yeah.
Sentiment.
Yeah. You should feel judged, Danny. Come
Plus,
on.
Plus, Coyle, what genre is mopeier than country music?
That's fair. Except mopey teenagers don't listen to country music. Again, not in my stereotype informed mind anyway.
I think that's right. I think there's a kind of rejection of country music on the part of alternative rock fans in the 1990s that makes alternative country a viable genre to the extent it was viable. It was always supposed to be the next big thing in the 90s, and it just kind of never became the next big thing.
I do think maybe I'm trying to like think of ways to agree with Coyle on some level. And so they'll be tangential, but I do think
bad for your soul, Danny, trying to agree with Coyle.
Well, one thing, you know me and my ethic of hospitality, right? And so even though I'm on his show, so that shouldn't really count here. But I suppose I would maybe say that people who were formerly mopey teenagers, like, and when I think, so let's go back to Uncle Tupelo. I've been listening to them a ton lately since this Corona thing has been happening, and I've been really kind of finding a lot of just satisfaction in listening to those albums again. And the song Whiskey Bottle.
Persuaded, paraded, inebriated, in doubt. Still aware of everything life carries on without. Cause there's one too many faces with dollar sign smiles. I gotta find the shortest path to the bar. Or a while, a long way from happiness. In a 3-hour time. Whiskey bottle.
I think I shared on Facebook as an example. That to me is someone with the line, whiskey bottle over Jesus, not forever, just for now. Like there's also like a sense of hope, I think, that kind of pervades these. And that's where the attachment to kind of traditional roots comes in. I mean, their first album is called No Depression because it's a cover of that Carter's Family song, No Depression, about like the hope of heaven, basically, right? And so I think that these are people who have come out of that kind of mopey teenager mindset and are more, I think it's they're world weary for sure, but I think they're also like wise and educated and also a little bit hopeful. So it's not complete. If this isn't like, what was that genre in the early 2000s, that was popular with like mopey teenagers. There was a popular like synth driven genre of rock music. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. This isn't that though.
I mean, some of it is mopey, no doubt, but some of almost every style of music is mopey.
Sure.
I mean, I would never call REM a mopey band, for example.
Emo is what I was thinking of. This emo, is not emo, right? Yeah.
Emo country. I'm sure there is such a thing.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Yeah.
If there isn't, there will be soon, I'm sure. We've talked about what I kind of intended to be throwaway lines more than we should have. Danny,
sorry. Can I I think there's one thing you do have right. Then Michael says the least wrong thing that you said.
That's the best I can do with Kyle.
It's the people who don't like white rural America. I do think there's a disaffection with there's a political disaffection in this kind of music, and
which you get from the first song on the first Uncle Tupelo album, Graveyard Shift. I mean,
it
the same town blues. Same old walls closing in. Well, what a life a mess can be. Well, I'm sitting here thinking of you. Won't you give your thoughts to me? Well, time won't wait, better open the gate. Get out and start, needs to be done. It's winding down, there's much you miss. Working on that graveyard shift. But I'm not saying this won't go wrong. It's there comes along. What I see is true. I can learn to believe. Can't look away. The powers that be might take it all away. Together we'll burn. Together we'll burn it away.
This is political music a lot of the time.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this is, I mean, I had a listener from the Sectarian Review email me, Elton Deese, I think you say his last name. And we had an email exchange for a long time about this kind of subject when he found out we were doing this. And he threw out the line that it's country music for Democrats. And I'm like, I kind of don't disagree with that by and large, right? I think that there's a way that that actually works. And so, yeah, I think that there is a disaffection with the homeland, but there's still an attachment to it. I would say that.
I think it's also worth thinking about where these bands come from. So Uncle Tupelo is from Belleville, Illinois, which is a suburb of St. Louis. It's kind of a rundown suburb, but it's a suburb. Right. Wilco moves to Chicago. We haven't mentioned them yet, but when Uncle Tupelo breaks up, the other guy from Uncle Tupelo, who was actually really the front man of Uncle Tupelo, Jay Farrar, he moves to St. Louis and starts the band Sun Volt. So they're from St. Louis. The Jayhawks are from Minneapolis. The Old 97s are from Dallas. Whiskey Town is from what? Raleigh, North Carolina, Danny?
Boy, I don't know.
Jacksonville, North Carolina. So they're actually a rural band. But a lot of these other bands are from big cities, and especially big cities in the Midwest. And I do think that makes a difference. This is not rural music. And even to the extent that Whiskey Town is rural music, they're very informed by punk, which is about the most unrural thing you can think of. So I do think that is the least wrong. I don't know that I would frame it as them not liking white rural America, but I do think it is people who are not necessarily from or informed by white rural America.
Right. And again, I think I'll have to go back and listen to, again, what Danny sent and some of the other stuff you guys have been recommending. But with the mentality this time that I'm actually not listening to country music. Like, if I think that I will probably like it, which I keep saying I'll like it better. It's not like I didn't enjoy it. It was fine. Like, it was perfectly serviceable music. But I think coming to it saying, all right, this is not going to be anything more than slightly influenced by Hank Williams or George Jones or whatever.
Yeah, that, absolutely.
That may be something different.
I really think you're going to have an easier time with this if you think of these groups as an extension of Graham Parsons on the one hand and the Minutemen on the other.
Mm. And I would also add, connecting back to our last episode, the whole neo-traditional stuff, particularly people like Dwight Yoakam, who was like, I think I used the term hyper real, like a hyper real version of a hillbilly band. And I think like he had as much in common with punk as he did country. And I think that created a space for a more kind of expansive, creative. It's like trying to get the spirit of Hank Williams without the sound, I guess.
Danny, do you remember the brief period in the 90s where No Depression magazine tried to get us all to call it insurgent country?
I remember it now. I forgot about that.
Like,
yes.
I think that's a pretty cool term for somebody like Dwight Yoakam, who is making recognizably country music, but from this political angle or social angle that is not the Nashville mainstream. I really like insurgent country. I just don't think it describes style very well. It's more of an attitude.
Yeah.
Kind of like outlaw country, I suppose.
Yeah. Cool. You were going to say something.
No, I'm still thinking about the outlaw country thing. Again, Yeah, no. I don't have anything to add to
Coyle,
that.
Coyle, you know, Waylon Jennings made an EP with the old 97s.
I did not know that. But I mean,
I think pretty much coronates alternative country as the heir to outlaw country in that sense.
So it's a marketing scheme and little else. I mean, wasn't that what we settled on with outlaw country?
Yeah, I did say that about outlaw country. I think alternative country is a marketing scheme. Yeah, I do think that in some ways that's what it is. But I also think the genre has an actual recognizable sound.
Sure.
Whether you like it or not.
Sure. No, that's fair. Danny, did you want to get to any more of that listener email? It was long, and I want to make sure we do it service.
Oh gosh, I just sent that to you guys for your edification. Like he had mentioned names, I had forgotten about the Beat Farmers from the 80s, and so he's sort of. I think that if you want to think about, and he kind of helps me do this sort of decade by decade development, almost like a Hegelian dialectic leading to the end of history here of alt country. But in the 70s, I think you're right. You got the Byrds. And Graham Parsons particularly, right? I think you've got in that all same decade, the singer-songwriter, the country's version of the singer-songwriter. We've not talked about Emmylou Harris, and I think she's super important.
And she makes a flat-out alternative country rock record in 1994, Wrecking Ball.
Yeah, yeah. So Emmylou Harris, and with her, I mean, she was, I think, wasn't she in a relationship with Graham Parsons? She toured with him. She worked with Graham Parsons for sure.
She was his duet partner. I don't know that they ever were romantically involved.
But then with her, you get Rodney Crowell because he was in the Hot Band. He was her guitarist. So that whole era in the 70s is part of the stew. It develops, I think, under the influence. And this is where Elton's email helped me understand. People like the Beat Farmers. And who else did he name in that email?
Lone Justice.
Oh, yeah. Lone Justice. In the 80s, they kind of define what it sounds like, and I think alongside of them on the radio, that sort of neo-traditional sound that we talked, some of the neo-traditionals, people like Yoakam and Steve Earle and that group, Katie Lang, and then in the 90s, that's when Uncle Tupelo kind of sets the stage for what it develops, and so I think he was totally right about that. And if you want to put some of his links in the show notes, they're really great articles, actually.
Yeah, one thing that I was going to ask you guys about again, because this is not my area, obviously, of country, or whatever genre it is, whatever it falls under. He mentions "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?" as a kind of alt country, and obviously the soundtrack from that was super popular. Interestingly, even though the movie was only in the theaters for like 2 weeks, because the company that made it, they'd made it through some kind of contractual obligation to the producer and the director, sort of like Idiocracy, where
Wait,
Fox,
is that true? I saw Oh Brother, Where Art Thou in the theater.
I did too, and the odds are that we saw it the week it came out or in the first couple of days the following week.
I had no idea. I love that movie.
It was a phenomenal movie. I remember specifically because I was like, this is such a great movie. I wanted to go back with some of my friends who hadn't seen it, and it wasn't in the theater anymore. But the soundtrack also was this huge hit. But when I think soundtrack from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, I don't even really think country music, let alone alt country. I think bluegrass, right? I think revival of, you know, Union Station, Alison Krauss, Ralph Stanley. I mean, I think the I feel like it nudges me towards Ricky Skaggs more than it does Uncle Tupelo.
I would not call that an alternative country record in any way other than the marketing behind it. Because the marketing was, sure, this is an alternative to the Nashville mainstream, which at the time was what, like Deanna Carter and people like that?
Right.
A bunch of people wearing leather pants.
Yeah, I think, yeah, this is Shania Twain's heyday, isn't it?
Well, except it also ends up on top 40 stations, so I don't even know if you can really say it's an alternative to Nashville, because Nashville's playing it.
But I think it could serve as sort of like a defining moment in Americana music, right?
Absolutely.
And so I think, alt country, this is where those two terms do mean something different. I would say you're right.
My feeling is, without an electric guitar, you're probably not going to be alternative country.
But even at the same time, and I guess maybe I'm talking about Americana now and not alt country, but that doesn't sound so different than Old Crow Renaissance Show, right? Or Dave Rollins Machine, right?
Well, and Gillian Welch is
Gillian
in
Gillian Welch, right? Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah.
She's so, in that movie.
Yeah, and so I feel like people who do kind of tour under that umbrella are relatable to that album, like, I guess.
Well, and Danny, the only time I've ever seen Gillian Welch and David Rawlings live, they were playing with Bright Eyes.
Oh, interesting.
Which is, I mean, I don't know that you'd call Bright Eyes alternative country most of the time, but they're certainly not Americana, and they're certainly not mainstream country.
Well, you know what, though?
There's something closer to emo, actually, now that you mention it.
This is going to make you mad, Michael, but my family subscribes to Apple Music, and so I know that we should be buying movie music from artists, but I've been listening to Apple has a Americana Essentials. It's like a compilation thing, and Bright Eyes is on that, actually. So,
because I mean, they definitely have songs that I would call alternative country. I think the guy's voice is so non-mainstream that I don't know that it could ever be anything other than alternative. He has such a alternative rock. What does TV Trots call it? The perishing alt rock voice.
Just good name.
Well, anything else on alt country? Otherwise, we'll let you guys go. I know you both have places to be.
I'm probably going to get labeled as a heathen.
You will not be the hated host on this episode, Danny.
But
I can promise you that.
Because you sacrifice goats.
Who told? No. So let's talk about Uncle Tupelo for a minute, who I love, adore Uncle Tupelo. Okay. They split up basically into two bands, Jay Farrar and the drummer, who I can never remember his name,
Mike
sadly.
Heidorn.
Yes. They become Sunvolt. And Sunvolt.
Although he kicks Mike Heidorn out of Sunvolt pretty quick, too.
Well, but they have one of the seminal albums of that first alternative radio in the early 90s with, oh gosh, what's the name of that?
Trace.
Oh, shoot. Trace, yes.
A remarkably good album.
Yes, and Drown is the song. Once you hear Drown, it's hard not to hear other bands of that era, like Everclear and all these other like guitar grungy bands, right? So they looked like the band that was going to really kind of carry alternative rock the mantle of it, right? And they've had a long career. After Trace, I've never really gotten into them. And something about Jay Farrar's voice after Uncle Tupelo, I don't love. I don't know what it is.
Have you ever seen them live, Danny?
No.
I saw Farrar once at the Variety Playhouse in Atlanta, and that SOB did not say a single word between songs. Like,
yeah, right?
He is the most taciturn artist I have ever seen live. And it was really obvious because opening for him, you probably know this band, the Bottle Rockets.
I don't know them.
Oh, they're great. But their lead singer opened for him, and he talked the whole time. Like, his stories were the best part of the whole concert. Mm. So I did come away with kind of a bad taste in my mouth about Farrar.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I really love Uncle Tupelo. I love Trace, which is a fantastic album. And then after that, I could take or leave, frankly, what they've done. And
I love his first solo album, Sebastopol, which is him trying to be a little bit more experimental.
Okay. Never heard that one, or never heard that one. And this is where it's going to get me in trouble. I never got into Wilco. Like, like,
ouch.
I know that I'm the kind of person who's supposed to love Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. And I cannot get through that album. And I mean, I don't dislike it. I have not developed emotionally to a point where that means anything to me. And I know that this is like a really kind of unorthodox opinion about Wilco, but yeah, Wilco is a band that I just never understood the acclaim for. And frankly, I kind of find Jeff Tweedy to be really annoying.
Not annoying. I would agree with that.
Yeah. And maybe that's it. It's not just his voice, but just, I just feel like, I don't know. He's the kind of artist.
I would say their run from being there through A Ghost Is Born, so 1997 to 2004, is as good as any 7-year run in rock music.
Being There is the one album of theirs I like the most.
Really just a roots rock record with some experimental portions.
Yeah, I do like Being There, but like I really, that's a band. I guess I'm trying to like make amends with Coil here. This is like stalwarts of alt country that I don't necessarily get into.
You right? don't have to make amends with me. I am, like I said, I am largely ignorant of the genre other than what you guys had me listen to, which again, I thought it was fine.
So Danny, what five alternative country records would you say are essential for our listeners to go listen to on streaming services and then, of course, buy because they want to support artists in this time of plague?
Oh, gosh. So that's a really hard one.
I sprung it on you without any kind of warning. So
I think you got to start with Grievous Angel by uh-huh. Graham Parsons. I don't even know. I really like Old Crow Medicine Show's first album. Like, I think that's a fantastic record. And it's very kind of like hillbilly music, right? So I would put them on there. I think No Depression by Uncle Tupelo. I don't even know. I'm just thinking off. I really like I forget the name of the Whiskey Town. Stranger's Almanac by Whiskey Town is one for me. I don't know. These are the ones I'm just saying things that are coming to my head. You're the expert.
I'm no more an expert than you are, I think. I would add, if you're going to do old 97s, I really love fight songs. I know everybody talks about Too Far to Care is the kind of classic old 97s record. I think fight songs is a better record, but it's a little less country, a little poppier. Jayhawks, Sound of Lies. Again, Tomorrow the Green Grass is the big one. Sound of Lies is a weirder record and a sadder record, and I think a better record. But I really like divorce records. I don't know what that says about me, but Sound of Lies is a divorce record. Gillian Welch, is the record called Time the Revelator or just The Revelator?
I don't know.
that's a fantastic album. Not really alt country, more Americana, but it's just great song after great song. I'm trying to, you know, I sprung the question on you, and yet I still can't come up with one. Trace by Sun Volt is unimpeachable as far as I'm concerned. That's almost a perfect record, better than any of the Uncle Tupelo albums, I think. Gus, I feel like I should pick something for the 21st century, but I'm not going to.
Well, especially if it kind of fizzles in the 21st century and turns into Americana, there would be no reason to.
Right. Well, and also the Gillian Welch album is from 2001. You know, I'm gonna shout out an album that most people probably haven't heard, which is Vigilantes of Love, Audible Sigh. They were a kind of band on the fringes of Christian rock and alternative country, and that album is produced by Buddy Miller, who was Emmylou Harris's guitar player. And man, it's a good album, and is really probably as good as anything else we've mentioned today. So those are the five I would say.
Elite Hotel by Emmylou Harris, going backwards, I guess, again. I guess that's predating the term, right? But
who cares?
But also, I feel like that's the value of this genre, right? Because it gave a mark, because it's a marketing ploy, right? It actually created a market for artists who are of a higher quality, frankly, than I don't know, like Mark
Florida
Chestnut. Mark Chestnut was fine, actually. I don't actually mind. When we talk about 90s, he's like one of my favorite of the 90s guys, right?
Is he the guy who did Too Cold at Home?
I don't even remember.
He is the one who has the song about how blessed and hot it is outside.
Too hot to fish, too hot for golf, and too cold at home.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Well, he has another song about it. It's like, it is so flipping hot out, and no, it's not just the humidity, it's hot.
And so, you know, so I feel like it created a market. So even for older people like Roseanne Cash, like Emmylou Harris, uh-huh. like Rodney Crowell, to kind of have late second career. Loretta Lynn makes that album with Jack White, right? That wouldn't be possible without this genre. And so in addition to creating a place for like the college radio scene to develop further on down the road, right? And I just feel like it's probably the most inclusive genre. I mean, in terms of like diversity of style, gender and race, I think Americana music probably leans whiter than it should, but it's also a place where Black music gets celebrated, right? And so
now would be the right time to talk about the Carolina Chocolate Drops.
Absolutely, yeah.
Brittany Howard, and what was her band called? The Alabama Shakes.
Alabama Shakes, right. Yeah, how do you market the Carolina Chocolate Drops if there isn't a label that sells Americana music slash alt, which is the inheritor of alt country, right? And so I think it has a real value, and it's honestly, I guess, it's probably what people call dad rock, just pejoratively. And so maybe I'm just in that demographic where it's like my favorite kind of music tends to fall within these borders.
I will also say that my entire exposure to country music came through alternative country. So, I mean, not my entire. I listened to some country music growing up, but my love for the genre came through this, which is maybe why I'm so fierce in defending it, Coyle, why I think you're such an idiot.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Defend away. I get to defend Hat Country the next time we do this. So, let me get a response on you guys from this quote again from this History of Country Music. This is Country Music USA, and we'll end with you guys' thoughts on this. I think it's doing a good job of trying to sort of hit both sides. So ask the question, who does country music belong to? And then the quote starts, Nashville does not own country music, even though it shapes public perceptions of what that music is. It is a terrible condescension, however, for critics to dismiss out of hand the music that emanates from Nashville studios or the Top 40 format. That music is not simply the product of a handful of musicians and producers. It is sustained by millions of listeners. Mm-hmm. To cite only one example, Tim McGraw's album Set This Circus Down leapt to the number one position on the charts during the same weeks of its issuance, did not generate that meteoric rise through some kind of capitalistic conspiracy that imposed it upon thousands of unwilling fans. The hosts of fans who buy McGraw's CDs or who faithfully attend Nashville's Fan Fair each June find something to listen to in contemporary country music that many of us reject or simply cannot hear. On the other hand, a big wide world of country music exists outside of Nashville that many listeners never experience. Ironically, one often has to search folk or country rock bins at record stores, listen to NPR's Prairie Home Companion, or the occasional documentaries on NPR, or attend venues that similarly cater to rock or alternative musicians, and then it gives a giant list of everyone that we could also be listening to. Which, again, I thought that was kind of a nice way to say, look, Nashville shouldn't just be dismissed by us intellectual snobs and the Academy, but also, music snobs it would be in this case, but also people who like Nashville should listen to the stuff outside of it.
Agreed. Although, you say there's no capitalist conspiracy, but in fact, there kind of is, in the sense that this stuff, country music radio is probably the last radio format to mean anything, and it is in fact being pushed on people. I don't know if you can call it a cabal of sinister record label executives, but people are told what to like, and a lot of people like what they're told to like because they're not told anything else. I think a good place to look for that is it called Tomato Gate, where there was some country music radio insider put out a memo that said that they weren't going to play more than one woman for every, you know, over however many men. Because men are the salad and women are just the tomatoes in the salad. Mm. So you can't tell me there's not some kind of capitalist conspiracy determining what people listen to.
And also, go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. I'm done.
Well, and so what do you do with the Dixie Chicks exile from country music then? Right. They were clearly at the top of the talent level, at the talent pool of country radio. Right.
Way more so than Toby Keith.
Yes, absolutely. And they were like excluded based on a political
mass popular uprising, though. Wasn't a capitalist conspiracy. That was the people listening to the radio were furious about that.
And that's why they were excluded, right?
Yes, they could have kept playing it on the radio stations, but my gosh, like what?
But that's the capitalist conspiracy.
That's not a corporate, like that's the people who are listening saying we don't, and we'll talk about this when we get to the 2000s, right? It's not corporate backroom decisions doing that. It's the people out there responding, buying the CDs or burning the CDs or whatever.
Well, first of all, I mean, the term capitalist conspiracy doesn't make any sense because the whole point of a critique of capitalism is to undermine the idea of a conspiracy. It's a structural thing that functions in such a way that it looks like a conspiracy, right? And so, and that's kind of what we have here is you have like a marketing problem for country music executives, right? And so this group gets expelled basically based on a marketing decision. And so I don't know. I think that argument is too kind to country radio. I think at a point in the 90s, like well into the 90s, I think you can make a case that there was still like something recognizably quirky, at least, if not good, about country music. So I don't know, like when we'll talk about the 90s when we get to that episode, but like people like Mark Chestnut and Faith Hill and folks like that, right?
Chrissy Yearwood.
Yeah, yeah.
For God's sake, Winona had big hits.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, but then tell me what's going on country music with the bro country is actually quality, right? I mean, I don't buy that argument. That you can use the same argument to say, well, people like the Real Housewives of Atlanta, so that must be good, right?
And
so
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, read Dwight McDonald's Mass Cult and Mid Cult. People like largely what they are told to like.
Yeah, and I'm unwilling to utterly dismiss popular tastes, and I am by no means the populist on the network, but I'm
that's true.
I'm unwilling to say that is utterly irrelevant, and I feel the same way about Hollywood, right? I mean,
it all depends on what you mean by dismissing popular taste. If what you mean is dismissing it as a category of aesthetic value, yeah, I probably do dismiss it.
Right.
If what you mean is dismissing anything that's popular, of course I do not. I mean, I spent a great deal of time last episode defending Garth Brooks, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, right. There's some good stuff in what gets pushed on country radio in the 90s, in the 2000s, and today. But the fact that people like it and it's popular does not make it good. And I sure do think there are structures in place that make people like things for reasons other than quality.
I want to throw like a thought experiment at you. So take two. There were two songs that I can think of recently that came out of the alt country milieu and were covered by mainstream radio guys, right? And both of them objectively suck. Okay,
what are they?
So when Hootie covers Wagon Wheel.
Staring up the road and pray to God I see headlights. I made it down the coast in 17 hours, picking me a bouquet of dogwood flowers. And I'm hoping for Raleigh, I can see my baby tonight. So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock.
That's a objectively terrible cover of a wonderful song.
Oh, man,
Victoria's
okay. Coming after you, Danny. She loves loves Darius Rucker.
I think it's kind of fun, so I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
And Tim McGraw's cover of Stars Go Blue by Ryan Adams is also terrible.
Dancing when the stars go blue. Dancing when the evening fell. Dancing in your wooden shoes, in a wedding gown. Dancing out on 7th Street. Dancing through the underground. Dancing with the marionette. Are you happy now? When the stars
like when yeah, compared bad. When Haven't compared to the source material. And so I feel like that's a clear demonstration of the failure of quality in what's considered popular. And both of those covers sold, I'm sure, a gazillion more copies than the originals, which are both substantially better.
Would you think they were terrible if you had never heard the originals?
I would think so. I feel the same way about. I always loved Johnny Cash's cover of Tom Waits's "Down There by the Train" until I heard Tom Waits's "Down There by the Train." So I would probably think less of them if I had later discovered the originals.
Right. So, I have not heard the original version of Wagon Wheel, but I have heard Hootie's cover of it, and I thought it was fine. I just heard it on the radio. So yeah, there's not saying anything against the original. I'm sure it's good. I'll even agree with you that it's probably better. Yeah. But
at least they're making some money off of it, Danny.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Ryan Adams made enough money off that cover to go abuse a bunch of women. So that's nice.
Ryan Adams is a douche. I hate to bring him up as an exemplar of anything. He is a terrible.
He wrote
person.
A lot of great songs.
But
he wrote a lot of great songs.
Indeed
a douche.
So yeah.
I kind of want him to go to jail so I can feel good about his music again. Once he pays his debt to society, I'll feel good about listening to him again.
Yeah. He treated women very badly. No doubt about it.
I just wanted to make sure our listeners know that we know that Ryan Adams is a douche since we praised him.
I mean, our listeners can know I barely know who that is. So
he was the singer of Whiskey Town that went off on his own.
Well, at first I thought you said Brian Adams. I was like, oh yeah. Wow, that's kind of harsh, man. But
he loves it when people make that error.
Yeah.
Did you see where he actually in a later concert? People are always teasing him about covering Summer or playing Summer of '69 on stage. And so finally, he did a really wonderful cover of Summer of '69 as
you
a kind
know,
of ironic
joke. In 2005,
joke.
Somebody yelled that out at a concert, and he left the stage. He like stopped playing. So exactly. We knew he was a douche back then. My favorite. Have you heard the email, the voicemail message he left Jim DeRogatis?
No, I have not.
I'm sure it's available online. If you hate Ryan Adams. It is worth a listen because he comes off as petulant a human being as has ever lived. Talk about mopey teenagers.
he fits that mold. That description fits the mold of Ryan Adams, no doubt about it. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, we've circled all the way back to the beginning, and we should end things because I know that, like I said, I know you guys have to go, and I can
and
hear my kids
shouting.
And also,
you're tired of being wrong.
I'm tired of being wrong. Like I said, I will cheerfully walk back those original propositions. Again, given the definitions that you guys have given me. Guys, thanks so much for coming on the show. Let me hit the outro real quick. The City of Man is part of the Christian Humanist Radio Network. Press liaison is Kristen Filippic. Please check out the other podcasts in our family. Get more information about our own show or our show notes by visiting christianhumanist.org. Please also leave us a review on iTunes to help other people find our show. Like our Facebook page at cityofman.com/cityofmanpodcast or send us an email at cityofmanpodcast.com. And please also check out the Sectarian Review. And I assume if you're listening to our show, you probably already know the Christian Humanist podcast because why on earth would you listen to our show if you didn't know that one? This is Coyle Neal, and on behalf of Ed Song, let me remind you to render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's and render unto God those things that are God's.
This is the last cowboy song, the end of 100 years. The voices sound sad as they're singing along. Another piece of America's lost.